Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome once again to the Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we bring you an insightful discussion on the latest issues facing the Catholic Church and the culture we live in from a theological perspective. Today's topic, Catholics and political engagement. Up first, we have the assistant director of the Thomistic Institute. He's also a professor at the Dominican House of Studies, as well as an author, podcaster, and Dominican priest. It's Father Gregory Pine. He joins us from Washington, D.C. We also have EW10's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan, as always. He joins us from our theology studio. And finally, we're joined by the Vice President and Editorial Director of EW10 News, Matthew Bunsen. And he joins us from our own studios in Washington, D.C. Thank you, gentlemen, for agreeing to show up on this panel talking about political engagement for Catholics. Let me ask you, Colin, the whole idea of render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God. Is that an implication that they should be totally separate, separation of church and state?
Well, it hasn't historically worked out that way, certainly more so in the early church when we could identify the state largely as a persecutor, and not so much in the medieval times and up to today when more and more, of course, we see the church and the state collaborating in a sense, working together. The citizens of a state are Christian and Jewish and other religions, so there's some basis for cooperation. The difficulty is always how to reconcile that as a Christian from the point of view of our Lord, and for Catholics from the point of view also of the Church's understanding of its meaning. And so I think that's something that every age has to deal with and deal with it in its own way, because every society is different. The ways of engagement are going to be different, the possibilities of engagement. So hopefully we can flesh some of that out today.
Very good. Father Gregory, let me ask you the idea, how should a Catholic think about his political responsibilities, the average Catholic, in a culture, let's say in the United States, we're not talking about the past history of Europe as a Christendom per se, but basically a non-religious secular organization. What is a Catholic or a Christian's perspective in getting involved in those things?
Maybe just to begin with the perspective that we are political animals, in the sense that we have a communal nature and that we're meant to experience some measure of flourishing here on earth and the full measure of flourishing in heaven as political animals. Mm-hmm. And so in the political sphere, as we make these different arrangements or work on these different relationships and interactions, we do so as baptized and in many cases confirmed persons. And so that has a way by which of orienting us towards a sacramental, a theological, an eschatological horizon. And so there's no way by which to wholly separate the political from the Catholic or the religious sphere, okay, insofar as we ourselves are marked when we enter into these political arrangements.
Well, let me ask you, define what you mean by a political animal.
Sure, just in the sense that our lives are meant to be shared. Maybe that's the most basic formulation. You'll find different kind of statements throughout the tradition, philosophically, theologically, like we're conjugal animals, or we're social animals, or political animals. There are certain things which we cannot do for ourselves, and we come into the world in these relationships and interactions. It's not something that we choose, as if we forged social contracts from an early age, but it's something that's just really constitutive of what we are as human beings. And so the question isn't whether or not we'll be in relationship. The question is whether or not we'll lean into or out of the relationships which make us to be what we are. And so I think it's like political engagement is just part of what it means to be human. The question is whether we do it well or ill.
Right. Let me ask you, Matthew, and picking up on what Father just said, is it important for us to realize that not being involved in the political situation is a big problem for our lives as Christians?
Absolutely. We go back to the very start of this conversation with the rendering unto Caesar. Our Lord demonstrates for us so many of the ways that we are to exist in society. He recognized in his statement to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and to render unto God what is God's, that there is legitimate authority. He lived under that authority, and as citizens of a country, so do we. Mm-hmm. And as members of a society, we have to take our values, our faith, into the public square. If we fail to do so, We're looking at a coarsening of culture. We're also abdicating our own responsibility to mm-hmm. proclaim the gospel, to bring those values, to bring the moral truth of the Catholic faith into daily life of people. It doesn't mean that we're trying to establish a theocracy, but certainly we are called to pick up on Father Gregory's point mm-hmm. to engage in political life because we are ourselves political creatures. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you, you're involved heavily in news on a regular basis for EWTN. It seems at times that the secular press is very impressed with Catholic social teaching, but not so impressed with its moral teachings. So how are we to make that balance in dealing with them in society?
Yeah, the first is by avoiding obvious risks of partisanship. Mm-hmm. As Catholics, we can't choose which teachings of the church we want to follow. To use that classic phrase, we can't be cafeteria Catholics. Okay. The great document in 2002 by then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger on the participation of Catholics in political life makes a really important point, and it's addressed both to politicians, candidates, and voters, in other words, all of us. And that is that you cannot lead a double life. You can't, on the one hand, try to proclaim yourself to be Catholic, and then on the other, live a life or espouse positions that are clearly contradictory to the teachings of the Church. So it starts in many ways with absolute coherence in our lives as Catholics. It means adhering to the Church's very clear moral teachings, understanding what intrinsic evils are, but then also engaging very clearly and in an informed way in Catholic social teaching, especially in the areas that we're certainly talking about a lot of today, and that is areas of prudential judgments in how we go about formulating policies. So it has to be coherent.
Okay. Colin, let me ask you, St. Thomas More talked about, you know, being a good man of the king, but God first. So, you know, for many years, the rap against the Catholic Church was, well, who are you going to listen to, the president or the pope?
Well, they have different purposes, obviously. The pope is our moral teacher. That's what the magisterium is. It's the teacher, the magister, the one who leads us and guides us in Christ's name. That has to be taken into account by Catholics. There's an old adage, which I think it goes back as far as Aristotle, certainly St. Thomas also noted this, and that is political prudence, in other words, judgments about policies in the political world, is the highest kind of prudence. In other words, we should have the most prudent people running politics or being in politics, and ourselves being as prudent as we can possibly be when we're making political judgments, because this has not only an effect on me and myself and my family, but on the entire society. And so this is something always for a Catholic to keep in mind. The Church is the one who is guiding us in the moral life. It's guiding us regarding social teaching. It's regarding us by war and peace and other issues. Mm-hmm. It's guiding us on a whole host of issues. And so we look to the Church for the guidance of our own prudent selves so that we can guide others and influence others in that same direction. Everybody else will not have the advantage of that necessarily, even if they are Catholics, but especially if they aren't. And so we should bring our best self to our political engagement and not our worst self, because we're trying to influence in a way which will be pleasing to God, be for our own benefit and for the benefit of everybody in the society.
Right. Let me ask you, Father, to follow up on that same general idea, how do we maintain the right order, as you might say, loving and serving our country while ensuring that our ultimate allegiance remains with God?
Yeah, I think maybe the first step is to recognize that there are various goods on offer and that we're responsible for recognizing those goods within a kind of hierarchy and then loving those goods as they merit, or loving those goods in a way proportionate to their relative rank. So it's like, I love my own life, I love the life of my family, I love the life of my country, I love the life of God. But there are going to be like times and places in which I'm made to choose, or I'm made to make manifest or communicable my preference for one over the other. You know, so like a country might ask a man to leave his family and to fight for the defense of the polity and even risk his life in that endeavor. But that requires us to have a clear kind of rank order, and it requires us to actually appropriate that rank order each, you know, personally and individually. It's not a mere matter of what goes on out there, As we just heard, you know, as Colin said, it's also a matter of our cultivating the virtues to actually act in principled fashion. So politics isn't just pulling the levers of reality. It's becoming agents in God's providence, which we're able to accomplish through the cultivation of prudence. And as Aristotle and St. Thomas teach, you can't just get one virtue. In order to have any virtue, you need to have all of the virtues.
I have to admit, this is the only show that has anything to do with politics where the word prudence has been used multiple times. Because if that's a prerequisite, we've got the wrong bunch in Washington. So let me ask you, Mr. Bunsen, what about the idea of someone saying, you know, there are things that the church teaches and there are things that the Holy Father makes statements on, that clearly he has, quote unquote, the competency to impact Catholics. And certainly everything he says should be something that Catholics take under consideration. But are there differences when it comes to political decisions?
Well, yes, in the sense that the Holy Father can weigh in on in issues such as immigration that falls under the areas of prudential judgment. Mm-hmm. Clearly, we will never hear a Holy Father equivocate on an issue of intrinsic evil, for example, abortion or euthanasia. So as Father Gregory was saying, there are very clear hierarchies and there are very clear priorities. The Holy Father is perfectly entitled and should weigh in, bringing the Church's wisdom to bear on an issue such as immigration. And as we have seen in recent weeks, bringing to bear his understanding, his teachings of the Church's perspective on just war and whether a conflict meets that. Catholics then have to take that to heart and continue to form themselves to deepen our own understanding of these major issues.
Now, you wrote a book on the Holy Father, so what's your impression of his image dealing with this kind of just war theory?
Well, it's been quite interesting to use that word again. He's not a politician, as he has very famously said now, but prudence. Mm-hmm. I think the Holy Father has demonstrated genuine prudence in how he has approached the question of just war. Clearly anchoring himself as a good Augustinian would in the Augustinian tradition. But he's also somebody who tries to be clear and remaining disciplined on message as he was dragged into what many at least thought was a political fight with President Donald Trump. He extricated himself from that and instead reframed the entire discussion by saying, I'm not a politician. I am here to proclaim the gospel. And I am a universal pastor concerned about peace and the welfare and the pursuit of the common good, which, of course, is one of those key elements anytime we discuss politics. So I think from that standpoint, he has learned very quickly how to negotiate what can be a very treacherous path in terms of social communications. Mm-hmm. In particular, as you noted earlier, a media that often misrepresents or outright lies about some of the things that the Church teaches and what some of our leaders, those in office, will say.
Let me ask you, Colin, with social media and let's say the Pope giving reflections on an airplane and the fact that this information is out on video instantaneously, if not live, as it is, so there's so much information out there, and how are you to evaluate these things?
Well, we're certainly living in different times, you know. The Church has had scandals and so on all down through its century. Thank God there was no electronic communications and social media in the 15th and 16th and 17th century. So we get everything instantly today, and our tendency is to evaluate it based only on the words that the Pope would say. And we do that, too, with what politicians say. It's much better to have a larger context to understand, and thankfully, you know, Matthew and our news organization are trying to give that context to the words of the Pope, and presumably also in the words of the President as a news organization. And so that's a valuable thing because you can very easily take things out of context. In social media, practically everything is taken out of context because it's not you may be starting with a story, but it's a story which could be biased or not biased, and you're running with that and how you're interpreting it. So it's a various danger. It's a danger area, certainly, and requires a very high degree of prudence. It's difficult to wade into those waters sometimes because, you know, you're going to offend somebody anyway, and they can respond. So it's a harder thing than ever in our history as human beings. But in the same way, it's a very useful thing because it brings us news of the world instantly on important matters. It brings us the words of the Holy Father, you know, as our live broadcasts on EWTN, as do our press entities and so on.
Right.
So all of those are good, and so it plays a role in that. And again, it comes back to prudence. It's a social arena, and it doesn't call for any less degree of prudence than any other aspect of human life. And the Christian should keep that in mind, certainly.
Right, and Christian is important. As Father Gregory, the fact that, you know, we're made in God's image, that should shape the way we engage politically. Part of the thing we have right now in politics is incredible viciousness. How do we combat that as Christians?
Yeah, I think earlier we made reference to the fact that the church's social doctrine is somewhat popular in the public square, the church's sexual doctrine less so. And it's interesting, I think in part that's because the sexual doctrine will traffic not exclusively, but largely in negative precepts, like thou shalt not kill, for instance. Whereas the social doctrine traffics more in like positive precepts, which can be harder to pin down, but also easier to accommodate to whatever political platform you are at present advancing. Mm-hmm. But when thinking about that social doctrine, it's quite demanding. You know, it's exigent. It places a claim on the human person. And you think about the kind of basic principles of Catholic social doctrine, the dignity of the human person, the common good, subsidiarity and solidarity. It really does issue from this understanding of man is made to the image and likeness of God, namely that he's got a mind with which to know and a heart with which to love, and that he's patterned on God's nature. He's capable of enjoying friendship with the Most High God, and that that friendship can actually impinge upon his relationships with other people here on earth. And I think that, you know, people might hear that and they think it's kind of mamby-pamby, hand-holdy type doctrine. But at the end of the day, again, it's demanding, it's exigent, it places a real claim on our lives. And so I think it's like, again, politics isn't just the mere art of the possible or just the producing of effects and outcomes, because if you don't make a virtuous citizenry who have mutual esteem for what God is doing in their brothers and sisters, in their neighbors, then it's only going to hold together for so long, and all regimes will in due course fail. So I think that it's not just a mere matter of our requiring like reform of institutions, it's a matter of our requiring reform of our own lives,
right?
Which, it's going to take a bit of time.
Let me pick up something that Matthew alluded to earlier. He was talking about the importance of some issues over other issues. For years, Cardinal Bernardine, the seamless garment was kind of something we heard about. Then it seemed like it wasn't in the forefront, and now it seems like it's come back in the forefront. What is that, and how does one make sure that everything is not made of equal importance? Or are they?
Sure, yeah, I'm assuming that's for me. I think that sometimes you'll hear, you know, folks in the public square say that we have to treat this and that in, you know, principled fashion, so we have to treat them as if they were on equal footing. But sometimes that can be used to equivocate, or it can be used to kind of obfuscate, to direct people's attention away from what is in fact most important or most principled. So like, you know, you think about the bishops' conversations that they've had apropos of the abortion question. And it's like, at this stage of the game, there's somewhere around 600,000 children who are killed each year in our, you know, in our country. And so to say that that is just as important as another thing, which is recognizably of lesser importance, can be, it can be a way by which to equivocate or to obfuscate. So I think that what we argue for is that there is a hierarchy of goods, and that those goods demand from us a certain measure of attachment, political engagement. We need to be able to inveigh against evils which threaten them. We need to be able to promote practices which safeguard them or cultivate them, and that we should allocate our time and energy and resources as a society in such a way as to reflect that hierarchy of goods. So while we do acknowledge the interconnections amongst issues, we nevertheless are able to set them forward in principled fashion and say this is, you know, closer to the highest principles, and these are the types of thing which flow from the highest principles, and so we ought to be able to explain them in such a way.
Very good. Let me ask you, Matthew, on the issue of you not only the just war that's out there, which obviously is a preeminent discussion, but other discussions like that have been very important over the last year and a half, immigration and things like that. It seems like at times the church has a wonderful position, but it doesn't seem to do a great job of explaining to people exactly how it's really supposed to work for the guy in the pew who's saying, yes, well, I want to support people who are in need of help, but how many can I support? Are there limits to these things? Are there legal situations right. that should be held? And sometimes the response is going to be, well, we need some sort of complete fixture, but nobody ever comes up with what that is. And the other part, I think, that sometimes interferes with dialogue on this is that if one were to question it, sometimes one is immediately called a racist or a bigot or something else like that, which defeats the purpose of trying to convince people of your position.
Yeah, all of that is absolutely true, and I think we have done, certainly as a church in the United States, a less than stellar job in communicating with great clarity what the church actually teaches in terms of our social teaching regarding an issue like immigration. I will give credit to the U.S. bishops as a group who, at least in their public statements, I can go back to November at their meeting when they mm-hmm. issued a statement on this, of being at least as clear as they could be on the fact that a country does have, and it's there in the Catechism and very clear in Catholic social teaching, a right to guard its own borders. And those who come into a country have an obligation to adhere to the laws of that country. Having said that, the church is also very clear on being welcoming to those who are here, but also caring for those in very difficult mm-hmm. situations who might find themselves in our country, even illegally. Mm-hmm. The Holy Father, I think, has tried to balance that out as well in his public statements. But I think there is, because of the level of political and even cultural polarization now in the country, especially in the part of the media, mm-hmm. that's a tough task in getting that message out. It's why the bishops, I think, have expressed a certain frustration that, A, they're not being heard, or mm-hmm. at times what they're saying on the one hand regarding borders is getting no attention at all, but what they're saying on some form of immigration reform is, but even that is spun in a way that certainly fits one particular political agenda.
Right. Well, let me ask you, Colin, in dealing with that as a Catholic and people looking at our involvement in politics and where people say, well, you know, you're in favor of this because you're a Catholic, because a lot of these people coming are Catholic, and so you're very supportive of this. Or in many cases, actually, that many organizations, are involved with the Catholic Church, and they're doing great work, but it allows people to question the motives.
Well, they will according to their own agendas in any case, and that's mm-hmm. just a feature of our political landscape and even social media, which we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. I think generally you get the polar opposite ends of a discussion. You never get the both and, what's the middle position here? What is the position by which we can justly determine a person being here and maybe even give them some kind of a conditional stay mm-hmm. to stay in the country? We can arrest the criminals and deport the criminals and the potential terrorists and things like that, as we know have been coming over the borders. And we can still treat them as human beings made in the image and likeness of God, not meaning that we get down on the ground and bow before them, but that we at least treat them with proper respect and dignity, even while we're deciding they're not suited to be in our country and mm-hmm. should be returned to their country of origin. So those are not incompatible values, to protect the country and at the same time to treat people with dignity. But unfortunately, the politics at the moment mm-hmm. Is probably the reason why 30 years of trying has not produced a sane immigration policy in the United States, because everybody gets polarized on it, and the parties are polarized and are afraid to move off their poles towards the middle.
Right. Yeah, actually, and I was going to say that as a follow-up for Father Gregory, part of the issue with that is that there are political agendas, obviously, that are underpinning some of the positions that's being taken. Obviously, one could make a case that the incredible amount of immigration that happened over the last few years, that there were some political underpinnings behind it besides just the idea that we're just being nice people.
Yeah, I think about in his big book of theology, St. Thomas will describe what man takes to be his final end. And there are a lot of tempting options, so wealth, honor, fame, glory, power, pleasure, etc. Yet, to no surprise of anyone listening to the show, he argues ultimately that it's only God who can satisfy. But I do think that politics is sometimes complicated by the fact that there are so many ulterior motives at work in the ongoing conversation as to what constitutes the common good. Mm-hmm. Ideally, politicians from both sides of the aisle come together and host a conversation as to what's good for the citizenry, as to what's good for the people whom they govern, and then they can work sedulously towards the realization of that. But what we come to discover is that that's exceedingly difficult to do, because often enough people are, you know, vying for occult constituencies, or they're vying for political projects of their own devising, which may not in fact lie in the direction of the common good. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, like, you know, people talk about welfare, for instance, and welfare was reformed in 1996. I don't know exactly how many welfare programs there are at present on offer, somewhere between like 100 and 150. But in 1996, I think it was only one welfare program that was reformed. But that would require us to reform welfare, would require us to host a conversation as to what constitutes the good for the citizenry, and to, mm-hmm. like, again, work sedulously towards the realization of that. So I think that these, again, they require virtue from the political actors so that they can encourage virtue among those whom they govern. And I think in these types of situations, right. it's really hard to host that type of conversation, because it requires a kind of entry-level virtue and an mm-hmm. entry-level transparency and discretion, which you don't often find to be present.
Right. So, Colin, let me ask you, just to wrap things up, the idea of the church's perspective and us as Catholics trying to lead a good Catholic life, being socially aware, but yet at the same time being a citizen of our own country.
Well, we have that obligation. The virtue of patriotism, as St. Thomas tells us, is a virtue of justice. It's what we owe to one of the sources of our being, which would be our parents and ancestors, obviously, on our biological and natural level, but also to our country in which we were born, in which we were raised, in which we are cultivated and benefit from all the social goods that are there. And so we have that patriotic debt, which must be a debt balanced by virtue. We should not either, be the enemy of our country and hate it and work against it, or should, on the other hand, idolize it and turn it mm-hmm. into an idolatry. These are things which in the early church, I think, was very forefront of people's minds when they talk about the idolatry of the soldier for the emperor, or for mm-hmm. the standard of his particular legion.
Right.
And so we shouldn't have a modern version of that today in our culture. But pursuing with virtue the goods which are proper to our national life, and defending those virtues and those goods ourselves where we can. And for most people, that's their political life as citizens. For some, it's their life of service in the military or in government.
Absolutely.
But in all of those cases, it should be a virtuous life and seeking virtuous goods.
Thank you. We'll have to leave it there. Thank you again, Father Gregory Pyne, Colin, and Matthew, for being with us today on our panel. And, of course, we thank you for joining us. Don't forget to join us next week right here on the Catholic Sphere, where we'll bring you yet another topic dealing with theological issues inside the Catholic Church. I'm Doug Keck. We'll see you next time.